The drama of Sam Altman's abrupt departure from OpenAI sent shockwaves across the globe, bringing the tech world to a standstill. He was reinstated just 4 days after his ouster, but the world is still confused over the company's leadership, left with many unanswered questions, perhaps beginning with what led to his firing in the first place. What has been undeniable from even afar is that the OpenAI fiasco reignited fierce global debate over the safety of advanced AI development. Is it just happening too fast? The future of AI, boomers versus doomers, is a topic of today's Zoom In segment. And for some insights, we have invited a very special guest this morning, physics professor at MIT, Max Tegmark, who is also an AI researcher, cosmologist, and the co-founder of the Future of Life Institute, now joins us via Zoom. Good morning, and thank you very much for joining us.
안녕하세요.
안녕하세요. Your Korean's polished.
감사합니다.
Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Tegmark. It was really easy for us to jump the gun from afar and make maybe even compares to Steve Jobs, the founder forced out of his own company. But maybe that's just besides the point. The board at OpenAI sacked Altman, citing his lack of candor. What do we know about why Altman was fired in the first place?
Well, what we do know is why OpenAI had this unusual corporate structure with a board that had the power to fire Sam Altman like this. They were created initially as a nonprofit organization with this very unusual structure, exactly because Sam Altman and many with him, you know, believe that their company will create not just really commercially successful AI, but AI that's way smarter than all of us humans. That's always been the goal of the company. Mm. And progress has been so quick recently that most people's forecast for when this might happen has plummeted from decades away to maybe 3 years away or 5 years away, or depending on who you ask. So people are kind of edgy because the idea of building a new, something which isn't just like a new technology like electricity, but more like a new species that's smarter than us could, of course, provide huge benefits, but it could also be a total disaster for humanity. And Sam Altman himself signed this letter last May warning that this could cause human extinction. Mm. So this is the background. And there's rampant speculation right now as to whether there was something powerful enough to be really scary already in the works at OpenAI, or whether this was something else. But what we can clearly take away from this is that there will be a huge clash when we get close to this sort of super powerful AI between, on one hand, safety, and on the other hand, money. And money won in this round.
And which is why it seems that your efforts has been to sort of put the brakes on how quickly they're developing, how you've dubbed it, a separate species. That's frightening.
It's important to remember, though, that there are two completely different kinds of artificial intelligence. On 99% of the stuff that people are working on and excited about is, in my opinion, relatively safe. But then there is about 1% of the effort which is going into this kind of a hubristic quest to really make humans economically obsolete and make machines that are just way better than us, more like another species. So 1% of the effort is causing 99% of the drama and controversy. And what's so special about OpenAI and also Google DeepMind is that they both have as a goal to ultimately make this kind of super intelligence, as opposed to most other companies. And Korea actually is going to play a key role in this, because I freshly back from the Bletchley Park summit in the UK, the first ever international summit on AI safety, where it was very exciting to learn that in less than half a year the next summit is going to be organized by you all in South Korea.
And so you're going to be headed here next.
Well, there are rumors that it might be a boring Zoom conference. I very much hope it's going to be in person, because then you'll have much more impact and you'll get to showcase your beautiful country and your wonderful AI industry. And I think have a real opportunity to use South Korean leadership to make sure we can have our cake and eat it, you know, set in place good, smart regulation so we can do the 99% of all the great stuff.
Okay.
But cool it a little bit with this crazy new species stuff.
Dr. Tegmark, because you've alluded to it, how do you evaluate the summit's outcome? Because you were just there in the UK. Do you think it was at least a great first round? And any good takeaways from the event?
It went a lot better than I expected, actually. It was kind of moving that personally, because I've been working for 9 years now for there being such a summit, and I had to pinch my arm. Is this really happening? And there was also more unity than I had expected. Right there on day one, you had the United States and China on the stage shaking hands and both talking about how important it is to keep AI safe. And of course, South Korea was there, and it was a truly global event. So I really look forward to seeing what South Korea can do to build on this, because now policymakers around the world have to move from talking the talk to walking the walk and start treating AI like any other industry. You know, in South Korea, if some biotech company wants to launch a new medicine, they first have to prove that it meets the South Korean safety standards and whatever harms there are rare enough that they are outweighed by the benefits, right? You have clinical trial requirements and stuff like this. And as soon as we can put similar safety standards in place for artificial intelligence, then we'll be in this wonderful situation where companies have an incentive to make things safe and things that they can't figure out how to make safe quite yet, the release just gets delayed a little bit until people can figure out how to actually control them.
And the unity is so important because tech is fast and regulations are just slow. So maybe going back to the top of today's conversation topic, Sam Altman's sudden ousting shed light on the schism between AI boomers who believe AI development should proceed unhindered with less restrictions, AI doomers who say speeding up the development will become a suicide race. Can you tell us about more of this existing tug of war and maybe walk us briefly through who the big name figures are representing each side, the AI boomers and the doomers?
Yeah, doomer is of course an insult that's hurled by people who don't want regulation, usually some corporate lobbyists. I myself have often been called a doomer, even though I'm an AI researcher here at MIT and I love technology. And it's pretty hilarious that other people that get put in that doomer camp include Jeff Hinton, Joshua Bengio, you know, founders of the field, and Sam Altman himself, who is certainly a guy who loves tech, but he signed this statement saying this could, you know, drive humanity extinct. I think the real distinction is a different one. I think the real distinction is between corporate lobbyists who instinctively want to just sabotage any regulation. You know, you had tobacco lobbyists who wanted no age restrictions on cigarettes once upon a time. You had car lobbyists who were against seatbelts in saying this was going to be so bad for innovation. You know, in Korea, you started selling much more cars after the seatbelt law was passed because driving became safer and people stopped being scared of buying cars. And this is exactly what's going to happen also if we put in place sensible safety standards for AI. So I think on the other side, the other camp, you have people who generally love tech, like Jeff Hinton and Sam Altman and so on, but are more open to the idea that you need safety standards, just like we have for medicines, for cars, for airplanes, and for other and all other powerful tech.
So you just want the safety standards in place. It's not your lack of love for tech itself. I think you highlight a really important point, which is why it seems that like-minded people like you and many scientists in the industry want to put the brakes on AI development to ensure that there are these safety nets in place. The Future of Life Institute that you co-founded led a movement earlier this year calling for a 6-month pause in the development of a more powerful AI language model. Of course, I'm wondering, is 6 months enough? The initiative was endorsed by numerous tech leaders, including but not limited to Elon Musk and Steve Wozniak. What's changed since that 6-month pause?
Everything, really. The key reason that we did the pause letter last March was because we felt that there was a lot of anxiety building up about where this was all going, and people felt afraid of speaking up and worrying about it for fear of being branded Luddite scaremongers or, you know, doomers. And what happened after we did this is that people felt very safe having this conversation, because you can't be seriously viewed as a Luddite if you're saying the same thing as the godfather of the field, Jeff Hinton and Sam Altman and so on. And so that's what's happened. We've seen a massive conversation in all walks of life, and including in the policymaking space. We started getting Senate hearings here in the U.S. Mm. We got the number one of the European Union, Ursula von der Leyen, tweeting about human extinction risk. And then we got this international summit, which now moves to South Korea. So I'm very pleased that the conversation is now happening, which is the first step. But as I said, that's not enough. We can't just talk the talk. We have to walk the walk now and put safety standards in place. And we, rather than just pausing the most risky stuff for its own sake, if you put safety standards in place, then naturally the things which aren't safe yet get paused. That's how it works with airplanes. If your airplanes keep crashing in the trial flights, you know, you delay the sale of those models. Same thing with drugs. If people keep dying in the clinical trials, then the company will go back and figure out how to make it safe. So the safety standards is really all we need. And then whatever needs to be paused a little bit gets paused, and everything that's already safe can benefit all of us by going on the market right away.
Here's a point that we wanted to touch upon. It's really not like the sci-fi film's doomsday scenario, but more like real-life Monopoly. Yann LeCun, often referred to as the AI godfather, says that the focus should not be fixed on what he calls far-fetched doomsday scenarios, but instead on the threat of AI being controlled by a small number of companies with a lot of money and interest to perhaps make more money. He argues that AI power players like OpenAI and DeepMind are the ones who are plotting regulatory capture of the AI industry. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I like Yann LeCun a lot. I really enjoy talking with him, and especially in person rather than over Twitter. But that statement of him is just blatantly incorrect. The lobbyists from Microsoft and Google and so on, it's on record what they're lobbying for. And what they're lobbying for is removing any regulation on ChatGPT and things like that. It's the opposite of what Yann LeCun has said. Yann LeCun is suggesting that they want ChatGPT to be regulated in some weird galaxy brain kind of regulatory capture scheme. But they're actually pushing for the opposite, which it is what companies always do. And if you look up what regulatory capture means in the dictionary, it says it means getting the regulators to do what's best for those particular companies. And we already mentioned earlier in our conversation how tobacco companies tried to get rid of regulation or anything that suggested that smoking was dangerous. Our car companies initially were against seatbelts. That's regulatory capture for you. Not push. It would be totally bizarre for these companies to push for things being regulated. So it's just backwards. And now we're having a very pitched battle in the European Union, where they've been trying for 2 years to finish this law called the EU AI Act. And in the very last second, some lobbyists from these big companies are trying to basically remove regulation of things like ChatGPT. And then there are a bunch of scientists and smaller companies who are like, no, this is crazy. put safety standards in place, not just for the safe stuff, but also for the most powerful models.
Professor Tegmark, you mentioned that at the start of today's interview that most of those who are behind the science behind AI and trying to make progress in this rather broad topic of discussion is that 99% are, you know, trying to do it for good. And it's just perhaps in the hands of the wrong 1%. And AI boomers say it is, in fact, for the greater good. They argue that among countless benefits AI will bring to humanity includes resolving some of the more complex or the most difficult global challenges like climate change. They also assert that overregulation would stifle innovation and progress. But that's a tricky balance, isn't it? Regulation has safety nets. And when does it start being overregulation? And what do you say to this?
I think it's really pretty simple. You can say the same thing about any technology. Let's take the knife, for example. Are you for it or against it? Are knives good or are they bad? Well, you can make a really awesome beef bibimbap with a knife. But you can also stab somebody with it, right? So what do? We put in place some laws saying that if you do bad things with knives, then you go to jail. Mm. So you give the right incentives. And by and large, in South Korea and America, people mostly do good things with knives, and we need exactly the same thing for AI. Mm. We've already done the same thing with all other technology that can cause harm, except AI, pretty much. Not because AI is somehow different, but because AI is a new kid on the block, and the policymakers just haven't had time to make the laws yet.
And that's maybe really it was because I wasn't alive when the knife was invented, but this new kid on the block feels like a much bigger threat.
Of course, it's a much bigger risk if you create a new species and lose control over it. But all technologies, from the knife to things like nuclear reactors, which can cause a lot more damage, as people near Fukushima can tell you all about, right? Have the same dual use situation. A nuclear reactor can produce carbon-free electricity, or it can cause all sorts of problems, which some Koreans now are upset because it's putting some radioactivity in your seawater right now. And so you want to have good safety standards. In Fukushima, clearly they were not good enough. And this brings us back to something I find deeply ironic. The civilian nuclear power industry in America is in the toilet. They're not building any more nuclear reactors here for civilian use. The biggest project that was ongoing in South Carolina just went bankrupt recently, lost over $10 billion because they were underregulated. So things like Fukushima and Three Mile Island happened, right? Had they been a little more careful, they wouldn't have caused this huge backlash that ruined the industry. I love artificial intelligence. I believe that all the things that are best about our technology are the products of intelligence, of human intelligence, and that if we can amplify it with artificial intelligence, we can create an incredibly awesome future. But we can squander it all if we don't have safety standards, do something really dumb, and have a backlash.
Dr. Tegmark, thank you so much for your insights. We appreciate it.
감사합니다.
감사합니다. If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.